I remember one of my first dinners I had at the football club. It wasn't a Geelong thing. It was like an AFL thing. And I was sitting around the table. I would have only been 19. And not one of the men asked me a question. And at the end of the dinner, one of the high execs said, "Oh, I'm sorry, what do you do?" And I'm like, "Oh, if you really want to know, I'm actually at uni, but you don't, do you?" And Tom's like, kicking me under the table. And I'm like, "Don't you dare kick me under the table." And Tom's like, "Don't do that." I'm like, "You know what? I don't care where I am. That's just bad manners."
Yeah. Of course.
Hello and welcome to this special interview episode of Shameless, the pop culture podcast for smart women. Today we'll be joined by the very talented Emma Hawkins, who is a marketing expert, blogger, the lifestyle director of Yellow Glen, and wife of AFL star Tom Hawkins.
We sat down with Emma in her management's office to talk about life in the public eye, what it's like to have 100,000 people following your life, pregnancy, and juggling your own career aspirations with your husband's.
Here's Emma. Emma, thank you so much for joining us
today. Thanks for having me.
Of course. We're going to start off with the first question that we ask absolutely everyone.
Even each other?
Even each other, which is, what have you been consuming this week? So listening to, watching, reading?
Yeah. 10 Little Fingers, 10 Little Toes.
This is new. What's this one?
It's a really famous book.
Do you find you're just...
The Hungry Caterpillar.
That's what I was going to say. I assume these are children's books. Do you find you're just reading the same ones over and over? Is that how it works?
I remember when I was pregnant, I would sit in Belle's nursery that we set up and I would read books like while she was in my tummy.
Yeah.
That was the stupidest thing ever because I was going to read those so many times.
Oh, that's so interesting because I thought that's what they said you meant to do.
Yeah, I thought that too, but...
That it's a clever thing to do to read to the baby before it's born.
Yeah. I don't know if it's clever for your sanity because you have to read those books so much in the next few years.
Do you have time then to consume anything for yourself? Like
I do. I'm in the car a lot. So I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Which ones do you like?
I am either podcasts like this.
You don't have to be polite. It's fine.
crime.
Yes.
I'm into like the ABC crime stories.
ABC do crime so well.
Did you get into The Teacher's Pet?
Yep.
Did you?
Yes. Serial. And then I'm also into this. The only thing I really consume, which is tragic, but it's just, you know, when you're so busy, like you just want to switch off. So I'm a big reality TV.
Oh my God, same.
That's really good for your sanity.
I love it. You know what? It makes me feel like I've got my shit together.
Yes.
I look at their lives and I'm like, I'm not that crazy. I'm not that crazy.
I'm so normal. Which ones in particular?
The American ones.
Really?
Actually, I've watched a bit of the Melbourne ones and I just couldn't because it was almost like too close to home. It was odd seeing it in your city. And I like the fact that the Housewives of Atlanta, New Jersey, Beverly Hills, like it's so far-fetched.
It's ridiculous.
So ridiculous.
I haven't seen any of the American ones. Is it really that outrageous?
It's so outrageous.
I do have a question for you about TV shows.
Yes.
Not a reality show. Playing for Keeps on Channel 10.
Oh,
did you watch it?
I watched the first episode.
What did you think? Inaccurate?
Tell you what, if you'd asked me that 6 weeks ago, I would have said yes, but with the stuff that's gone on in the off-season.
Yes. interesting.
Wow.
It has been a big off-season.
It's been a really big off-season. No.
The Daily Mail has had an absolute riot.
They have.
I thought it was, from a TV drama perspective for Australian TV, I think it's good and we need to support more of that. They had a great wardrobe. The cast was fantastic.
Yeah.
I personally couldn't relate to anything in there. Yeah. I didn't have anyone coming and taking me to Dior to dress me up for a game.
Yes.
That would have been lovely.
Wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be the glamour? Yeah, that's what I find interesting is that do you know if they consulted anyone on it?
I've heard they did.
Yeah.
But I don't know 100%.
It wasn't you then.
Definitely wasn't me.
The Dior thing. Emma, what we wanted to do, I want to take you back to the start. When you were really young, what kind of person did you envisage yourself to be or what did you want to do with your life?
I was always outgoing. I always loved the arts and theatre. I never knew really what I wanted to do. I still don't 100% know.
Does anyone? That's comforting.
We're all faking it till we make it.
That's true.
I always knew I wanted to do something that involved people and being around people.
Yeah.
I'm an extrovert. I grew up in Deniliquin, which is a really small country town, and it was an amazing childhood. And I went to boarding school when I was 13.
As an extrovert, were you an extrovert as a child?
Yes.
And how was that growing up in the country then? Was it was enough outlets for...
My parents were pretty clever in that I was riding horses every afternoon. Yeah. I was at a horse show every weekend. I was at the local netball team. And then, I went to Melbourne when I was 12, turning 13. So it was pretty young to head away. But I was, I think I broke my mum's heart. She left me at the boarding house and I was like, okay, goodbye. I'm ready.
This is my new life.
I saw the city lights and I felt home. I loved it.
Yeah.
And that gave me a lot to do through my teens. I got involved in everything at school. I was just a real... And I was also taught that if you're given an opportunity... You take it and you participate, even if you're not good at it.
Yeah.
You have to take what's presented in front of you and don't waste anyone's time. And if you make a commitment, you do it.
Yeah.
I think the older I get, the more I realise you just got to fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
Even if you've... Because you're never going to feel prepared enough, no matter what it is, whether it's work or a hobby or whatever. You're never going to feel prepared.
No.
And it's way better just to dive into something.
Yeah.
So you went to school in Melbourne and then you went on to uni and did marketing communications, that's right? Yep. What was it that drew you to that? Was it just...
I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, so...
Story of my life.
Yeah. But it seemed a communications degree is kind of good for that, in that if you know you can
double,
talk...
Yeah, it was a double arts comms, so I double majored in criminology in the end. I picked up crim as an art elective because it fit well in my timetable and I didn't want to go out to Clayton.
Fair enough.
We don't blame you for that.
Yeah. Five times
a week. Beautiful concrete campus out there.
A wind tunnel. Yeah. It's a great university. Yeah. So I picked my subjects based on the fact that I'd only be there 3 days a week.
I think a lot of people do that.
I do the exact same thing.
But I ended up loving uni. I loved I always loved school. I wasn't the most academic. I was an average student, but I found it really tough, hard work learning. I really had to make a big effort and go above and beyond. Whereas uni, I loved everything I was learning. I did film and television, criminology, lit, a range of things that I got to choose for the first time. And because I liked them, I did really well there. So I loved uni and then did arts comms because I didn't exactly know what I wanted to do. I always thought I wanted to do PR, but then I didn't.
I think PR, once you learn more and more what it's actually about, it's very daunting.
Well, it seems very glamorous, but I think the reality of it is less glamorous.
It's a lot of rejection. It's a lot of putting yourself out there.
And, imagine if you're working for a client that's really... imagine pushing dog food every day or something. Mm-hmm. That it could be really exciting for your first month.
No, it's true. Well, as journalists, we get a lot of phone calls from PR people pitching stories. Yeah. And I love when a good one comes along.
Yeah.
But the reality is we cannot do every story that comes to us.
Yeah. But I think it's good knowing PR or sales in any, no matter what you do in the future. So after I finished uni, I went and travelled for 6 months and then I came back and I was a little bit cocky. I was that generation that was like, I've had a great school, I've gone to... a great uni, where's my job?
Come to me.
Yeah, and I was, that new generation of this cockiness, which it took me a while to get a job, and then I interviewed it was ACP Magazines at the time. It's now Bauer, and I think I had maybe 12 interviews for different magazines in a sales position, and I wasn't sure I wanted to do sales, but I got an amazing opportunity working at Gourmet Traveller in an account management role, which is a big role for someone just out of uni. My dad said, I remember actually the director said, if we give you the job, how do we know that you'll stay? Because you've never done this before. How do you know if you'll like it? And I just said, I can tell you, even if I don't like it, I'll stay because I've made a commitment. Mm. And that's what my parents have always taught me. If you commit, show up, rock up and do your job.
Yeah.
So I did, and I ended up really liking it. And I think no matter in the future, it was good because going on starting my own businesses and doing my own thing, you need to know sales.
Yes.
Even if you're an accountant, you've got to know how to sell yourself, your skills, your product, anything.
It's a very hard thing to do.
It is.
I think that's something we've learned recently, getting sponsors on the podcast now, is we have just had a revelation that we're like, these are skills that we need for life.
Yeah.
And it's hard to sell yourself.
It's awkward selling yourself. Oh, I can sell that paperclip on the table. But if it's yourself, you don't want to come across as arrogant or, and I think that's a very Aussie thing. It's this tall poppy syndrome. Like we can't get too ahead of ourselves. Totally. We can't, you know, embrace ourselves too much in our skills because we feel embarrassed to do so.
Especially as women as well. There's the Australian thing because people really value humility in Australia, but also being a woman, like trying to sell yourself as a woman is really hard.
It is. Yeah. It's really hard.
I think one of the things I admire about you is I've been thinking a lot about the media and marketing and everything, is that you've done it yourself. You did your time at ACP and then Bauer.
Yeah.
But you, it feels like you've really created your own type of work and your own brand and yourself. And I think that's very 2018 and of the moment.
Very of the moment.
It feels kind of old school now to work for a traditional company or have like a 9-to-5, whereas you have all these different things going at the same time that you've created off your own back and you've done it yourself.
Thank you. I think it's it was really important to get that old school foundation. I had a manager who at the time I thought I compared her to the Devil Wears Prada. Like she, the amount of times I cried in the car.
Or, kidding.
But it turned out she taught me so many lessons.
Yeah.
And I really thank her for that, like, you know, 10 years on. But at one point I got to, I think I was moving, I was trying to move to Geelong and I was finding it all a bit hard being in Sydney, Melbourne, Geelong. And was also, and this is no disrespect for the women that choose to do it, but I kind of was looking at a lot of the mums in the in that big corporate workplace and the hours that they were pulling, and I'm like, I don't know if I want to do that. I don't know if I want to work. At that time, we were working 8 to 8. The hours were crazy, and it's like, for what, to get to that management role and still work those
work
hours?
More hours.
Yeah.
I kind of thought, well, I might go and try and do something myself. And probably what a lot of people don't know on social media is I dedicate 1 to 2 days a week doing contract marketing.
Yeah.
For, like this week I just finished with a finance company.
I saw you, did you recently update your Instagram bio to put the marketing thing in there?
Yeah.
Was that deliberate?
Yeah, it was, because I think so many people are confused with what I do. And going back to your point and what I was saying before, it's hard to define what I do, but that's 2018 and I think that's a good thing.
It
I like
is.
Lots of different things to keep me stimulated. So on Monday, I'm at home at the farm with Belle as a mum. That's my set day. On Tuesdays, I usually work a contract job. And some of these contracts will go from 3 months to 6 months.
Yeah.
And that's media buying for the media planning. And then on a Wednesday, I might dedicate something to Waddle Health or Treasury Wine, some of the social stuff I do. And then on Thursday, we see. And then Friday, I'm back at the farm. But it's flexible as a mother, and that's all I wanted to work my ass off to get to. So have something that I could be flexible with work.
Of course.
Absolutely.
When you started dating Tom, how conscious of you as you were sort of trying to build your own career that his career was so public, and how did you sort of navigate how your own would be seen or whether yours was going to ever take priority? Did it cross your mind?
Yeah, towards the end, at the start, not really. Like, we finished school, he went to Geelong, I stayed at Monash.
And you met early, we met 17, early. Right?
Yeah, I knew him long before that. Mm-hmm. We just started, you know, hooking up.
As they do.
But I was doing my own thing and he was doing his own thing and we'd kind of meet in the middle, and then I went traveling and then I was working in Melbourne, and we always made it, we were very conscious to do our own things.
Yeah.
And I think the only reason why we worked through those years when we were in our 20s was because I was with someone who was like happy for me to go.
Spread your wings.
Do my thing, do what I need to do. If I had someone that wasn't willing, we just wouldn't have made it. And we grew up, like we're different people from when we were 18, but we've managed to grow up and change and evolve together. And even still, like, Tom knows exactly who I am. I remember one of my first dinners I had at the football club. It wasn't a Geelong thing, it was like an AFL thing. And I was sitting around the table, I would have only been 19, and not one of the men asked me a question.
Oh,
not one.
You're kidding.
And at the end of the dinner, one of the high execs said, oh, I'm sorry, what do you do? And I'm like, oh, if you really want to know, I'm actually at uni, but you don't, do you? And
did you say that?
Yeah, and Tom's like kicking me under the table. And I'm like, don't you dare kick me under the table. And Tom's like, don't do that. I'm like, you know what? I don't care where I am. That's just bad manners.
Yeah. Of course.
That's and I'm really not going to sit here next to you for the next however long and not be spoken to. That's just rude.
Do you think that's evolved over time, that sort of culture of inclusion with the women, and that you guys being the priority too?
So much.
Really?
Like, especially at our football club. Our I can't speak for other football clubs, but ours is amazing. And I think generally in the AFL, it's definitely evolved. Because there was at a time where you would feel whether and it made Tom feel uncomfortable as well, but you would feel like no one gave a shit about you.
Yeah.
Or
you're an accessory. You're just there to look pretty.
And all the questions would end up being about Tom. And it's quite, we're probably the opposite. I'm the one that love questions and speaking about myself. He hates it.
He's not the interesting one. I am. That's what you should
He's definitely said. Interesting, but he doesn't like talking about
course,
himself.
Exactly.
Me, on the other hand.
Ask me the questions.
But you evolve and everyone, there's just something in anyone's industry or life, I guess. It is what it is.
How do you feel about the term wag? I think it's obviously been around forever and it used to have quite a negative connotation, whereas like with Playing for Keeps now, people are very inherently interested in the lives and the careers and the stories behind the women.
No, I don't like the term at all. Mm-hmm. I think it would be very easy for me to sit here and say, well, if you just take it with a grain of salt and to say it, and it is what it is, you're technically a wife and a girlfriend. But the fact of the matter is, and the reality is, it has a negative connotation and there is nothing similar to a man. They don't get That's something true. In front of their name. And I think...
Boyfriends and husbands, bars.
Yeah, bars. And I think, like, you see someone like Beck Judd still get introduced in the papers as a wag. I'm sorry, but...
She's not a wag.
And she was
an entrepreneur and a businesswoman.
Oh, absolutely.
Mother.
With one of the strongest brands in the country.
Yeah, and I think... There's no denying it would be remiss of me to say that term, I haven't used that term or that position to my benefit at some points. Like, you have to admit that. Mm. But I think maybe I've been exposed to certain people who've helped me in my career, or maybe there've been a few more windows, but I'd be stupid not to take them.
Absolutely.
I would be a bad businesswoman not to take them.
Exactly. It's savvy to use the position that you're in.
And I mean, you can only use your things. Position. If you're shit at what you do, you don't get another job.
This is the thing. There's only one Rebecca Judd. There's only one Nadia Bartel. There's only one Emma Hawkins. Like, not every wag makes a name for themselves and builds a company
and
off what
they're
doing.
And not everyone wants to.
No, exactly.
Because they don't need to. A lot of them are mums, lawyers, doctors, nurses, they don't need to. But if you want to build something that involves branding and awareness, then it is to me not that much different than my friends who are lawyers who have used their friends whose parents or
everyone's got connections,
partners at a law firm to get an interview.
It's true. It's all
everyone
all,
does it.
It's all who you know.
Yeah,
almost always.
You just got to use those opportunities. Yeah. And if you're not good at what you do, you won't get the job.
Yeah, so and you won't get the one after it either.
Nah.
You do have 100,000 people following you on Instagram.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? Because
it's so weird.
It's weird when you, I think as our podcast has grown, we've realized this as well. We don't have 100,000 listeners, but we do have a significant...
You've got a lot.
A significant amount of listeners. I think we realize that you see that number, you're like, okay, that's a number. And then you might meet someone out who knows who you are, or you might encounter... And
you
situation.
Forget that people are listening to what you say or watching.
Yeah,
what
where you realize those people are numbers. How does it feel to know that you have that many people following your life and knowing who you
it's
are?
It's quite weird, and I've definitely been a bit more calculated the last few years. Like, I've never found it too weird people knowing Tom and I, because sometimes I assume they just know me because of Tom and or Geelong's a small town.
Mm.
But I find it odd when people come up and they like know Belle. I'm like, that's
yes,
and
that's
I love, but I love sharing her, but I'm thinking maybe I might take her off when she's three. Mm. I don't. We're the first generation going through
it's
this.
It's very true.
So it'd be great if we could see someone else before us fuck up.
It's like, how did those kids turn out?
We're the guinea pigs. But I've spoken to a lot of women in the industry about that, and it's each their own. One of my friends said, it's a part of life. It's a part of my life, and I choose to introduce them to it so they are educated and aware rather than shield them from it. And then when they get older, it's just...
What is this world?
What is this? Mm. Beg your pardon. And then the other side is their privacy, their digital footprint. I've got strict rules with Belle with what I put up. I never do, you know, things in the bath or things that I think would embarrass her down the track. I never post live locations anymore either.
Yeah.
I'll do an Insta story once I've left or so little things like that I'm a bit aware of, and I think it's a hard balance because you get a good engagement if you're open and honest and real, but then you also open yourself up to some scary things out there on the digital world. Like, I've never been bullied in my life until I'm a 30-year-old mother. Like, that's insane. But then people say, well, you choose to put yourself on, which is no excuse. It's still all new and it's changing so quickly.
But when you put yourself out there, for sure, and people can critique what you do, but they can't troll you for the choices that you make, which I think is definitely the difference.
I've been pretty lucky. I've only had a few, but like some people I know, it is brutal.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you been affected by much online that's come your way?
A few times I did. There was I think it was the first time I felt that mother's guilt, and it was when Belle was 5 months and I put a photo, Tom was holding her
on a tractor
and I put that up and I thought it was the cutest photo ever, and then I was blasted gorgeous. On Mamma Mia, which to me was devastating because I was a reader, I loved it, I looked up, but I'm like, you are publicly shaming a new mum here. And I never said any, this is probably the first time, I've just chose to ignore it, but Tom's always said, if you're not comfortable receiving the bad, then you shouldn't accept the good either.
That's what I find all the time, is that it's all well and good for you to read all the praise, but if you read the praise, you've got to read the critique too, and both can mess you up.
Yeah, and you've got to be okay with it. And so I've always, if it does start ever affecting me, I will remove myself.
Yeah.
There's no point putting yourself through pain if you can't deal with it, but it doesn't really affect me anymore, like, at all. I would say at the moment. Who knows though?
When it comes to parenting, there are stuff that you don't share, but what about when it comes to you? Are there experiences or parts of yourself that you don't share with the people that follow you?
Yeah, heaps.
Is it not as conscious?
I probably just think it's boring. So.
Well, I think there's quite a
lot of my friends aren't involved in social media. Yeah. Like, I mean, you've got that community of industry women who I would definitely say are friends, but a lot of my old school mates, like, they are not on social media at all. Like, one of my girlfriends, she was traveling last year and she said, Em, how do I get hashtag sponsored for the trips? And I'm like, what, honey? And she's like, when I'm traveling, is it like a big competition? And I'm like, no, babe, when someone says that, that means they've been paid for the post. And she's like, oh, I thought it was like, sponsor me. I'm traveling.
Oh, that's amazing.
I'm like, no.
Amazing.
So I probably don't put a lot of my friends' side of things like that because they're not into it and they don't really care either.
But that's kind of nice to sort of keep you grounded, quote unquote.
Have a world outside of it all.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's pressure these days on women to share every aspect, like warts and all of their lives. Whereas I know in myself, I don't, like, when I wake up in the morning with no makeup on, I'm not going to put that on Instagram. No. Not because I don't want women to be like, you're fine without makeup, but because it's not, I just don't want to. Like, we shouldn't have to share every aspect
and
of our life.
And some women do, and I follow them, and I think it's amazing because I relate to them, but I'm your classic, basically just share the highlight snippets.
Well, most of us are.
Yeah.
We were talking just before we started recording, you are pregnant and you have HG, which is...
something. Gabber something.
Bro, it is the... I feel like it's now well known as sort of like the Kate Middleton pregnancy.
I know, when I had it with Belle, they were like, this is what Kate had. I'm like, oh, great, lucky me.
She really put it on the
I don't feel like a princess.
But the other thing I was saying is you wrote a blog post for Waddle Health, which is one of your partners.
Yes. Yeah.
And you were talking about HG, and I mentioned it was... I really noticed how in almost every second paragraph you were very conscious that you were acknowledging that, yes, I'm pregnant, and yes, I'm really stoked about that, but also this is an experience. It's really not fun.
Yeah, I had... With Belle, I was pretty open about my pregnancy, and I had a few women say, like, stop complaining or something. And I think that was maybe one of the, you know, when you were saying before, you can read all the good, but then you'll have one bad and it stays with you. And I am really conscious that I don't want to complain, but I do struggle with it. Like, I get hospitalized for it multiple times, and it's hard with a toddler. I don't have any family in Geelong either. So,
oh, that's so hard.
I don't have like my mum around the corner who can help. And the last time I was hospitalised was when Tom was away for 2 days and I just couldn't look after myself properly. But I am conscious that so many women do struggle to conceive, and the last thing they want to hear about is someone struggling through their pregnancy, because they would do anything. But it is all relative as well. And since speaking openly about it, I have so many women, you know, say, thank you so much. Like, none of my friends get it. And then I start writing back to them because I'm like, none of my friends get it either.
Is it quite lonely?
Yeah, it is. So it's nice opening that stuff up online because I have networked and met a lot of women through this platform. I actually met someone who helped me with teething gel. She's from Adelaide and then she was in Geelong one weekend and we caught up and had coffee.
Oh, that's so lovely.
And now we still catch up. So there's like a really good side to being open if you're confident enough to, I guess, expose yourself a little bit. Mm. There's a lot of benefits from it. But going back to the HG stuff, it's everyone's pregnancies a relative to them, and so you've just got to remind yourself of that, I think.
Yeah, of course. Where we sort of wanted to end today, because I think this is one of the most interesting parts about doing this podcast, is sort of the disconnect between being relatively well known and being the person that you are and people not really knowing that. What do you think people don't see in you? Or maybe the biggest misconception, what is it about you that you think people don't know?
Oh, I don't know.
Just stumped you. Just a minute.
I don't know.
Maybe a misconception about being a wag.
Maybe.
Michelle just freaked out when she used that term.
Not a very good farmer. I mean, I put a lot of farming stuff on my channels, but I'm actually terrible.
That's quite funny.
I'm really, really, like, from a girl who grew up in the country.
Yeah, it's true. It's not like you're just a city girl turning up on
like,
a farm.
Yeah, it's not like I'm born and raised in the city and then plop, you're out on a farm in Geelong. Like, I should adapt pretty easily, and I do love it, but I'm actually terrible. I mean, I leave gates open, but I love it. And it does feel like home. It has a very nostalgic feeling, like of my childhood. But I'm not very good at farming, even though on my Insta stories I'm pretending to be. I am passionate about the industries, though, and I like using my platform to.
Well, that is really interesting because I don't think I personally on my feed get that anywhere else.
No. Yeah, and rural women, I feel like there's so many stories that we don't normally hear because we're so focused on metropolitan areas and cities.
Yeah, and I've had a lot of. Women who are living rurally that have connected with me saying, you know, thanks for just showing us. And I understand our farm life on Instagram is not like the real deal, especially at the moment with the horrific droughts that are happening. But a lot of women feel very isolated out in the country, especially from the glamour and the fashion, and they're very into that. So social media for them is a way to connect and feel like they're staying on top of things when they're so isolated. So I think social media in terms of, regional Australia is really important.
Yeah, that's really nice. And to finish, do you have a woman in the public eye that you look up to or is inspirational for you?
I have so many. Who are yours?
Oh, women for me. I love Pandora Sykes, who's a bit of a random one, but I always pick her. No, she's not Australian. I think I look up to women like Zoe Foster-Blake.
I was going
to
say someone like Zoe Foster-Blake.
Simply because she's so entrepreneurial and savvy. And I think, again, like we could say that, she's been given connections through Hamish Blake being her husband. But at the same time, I think she has built such a glittering career for herself.
And I think my thing for Zoe is that she's sort of making career cool, which is really important for young people.
Yeah, I think she's... 100% agree with that. I think she's making it cool, fun, and empowering. I'd definitely have to say Zoe. Who else? They might not necessarily even be like well known, but I've got a lot of mentors, like four or five, and a lot of them are mums now. Kate McGrath, who's the chief editor and chief of Channel 9 News.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Lots. I think Megan Gale's amazing.
It's funny because I saw Megan Gale referred to as a wag in one of
the
races. Wag Megan Gale with her partner, with Sean, AFL star Sean Hampson with partner and wag
and
Megan
wag.
Gale.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Ridiculous.
Oh my God, that just blew my mind. Yeah, Megan Gale's a great one too.
There's so many. There's so many.
It's true.
And
we're
a
not
lot
sure.
of my friends, like, I just, I'm such a believer in surrounding yourself. Like, Lana Wilkinson, actually, she's amazing. She always comes out with the best quotes. One year she said to me, vision got bigger, circle got smaller. And it's all about you don't need a million people around you to make you successful or feel good. You keep, like, even if you've got four or five, that's all you need. It's like just a good, solid crew around you. And I feel like I've really got that. And I think if I could recommend, like, to young women, like, just choose your friends, choose your crew, choose your circle wisely, and if they're good, just stick with them. They're the most inspiring.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show. We love
Thanks
chatting
for
to
having
you.
Me. Yeah, it's been the best. Thank you so much for joining us for that special episode of Shameless. Emma Hawkins was an absolute delight. Zara and I basically fell in love with her by the end of that interview. She's so candid and honest and brilliant. We really highly recommend you go check her out. On Instagram, she is at EmmaHawkins_, or you can go to EmmaHawkins.com. As for Zara and I, you guys know exactly where we are by now. We're on Instagram at Shameless Podcast, or you can join our Facebook group, which is Shameless Celebrity Gossip. These interview episodes will probably be dropping in your feeds every 3 or so Thursdays. So we will be talking to some of the most brilliant people from your Instagram feed, and we hope you enjoy the conversations as much as we do. Thanks, guys. See you on Monday.